Hey, this is H1. We're going to be running it back with another episode talking about chess knowledge, chess wisdom, and chess understanding again. Today, we're going to be going over how to analyze Grandmaster games. And I know this is not as simple. You probably already looked at Grandmaster games and you're like, I don't understand any of these moves that are happening, but I'm just so excited on learning and you don't even know what to learn. I feel for you. I used to be a beginner too. Until I realized that there are some secrets that grandmasters do that you probably don't even know of yet that I'm going to tell you right now so that you can be like, oh, that's why that grandmaster did that move. That's why Anish Giri did this move in this position because of this principle that H1 showed me. I want you to get to the point where you can at least acknowledge, oh, snap, I would not have thought of that in that position. All right? So, let's move on to the next segment on how to analyze Grandmaster games, and I'm going to be giving you several tips on how to do so. Peace! Let's get started! All right, before I get into this episode, I just want to preface it by saying you are not going to be able to analyze every single Grandmaster chess game in the world. Just because you know these principles does not make you an expert, but you still have to put in the work and effort to like understand the game deeply, because that's what it takes to analyze Grandmaster moves, is to understand the game in a deep manner. All right, so you're gonna have to get that experience in, and it might take you 100 games, it might take you 1,000, it might take you even more than what I have on chess.com, which is like tens of thousands of games, just to scratch the surface of chess. But if you have some outside help like H1, then you might be good, you might be fine. Let's get into these principles right quick. First of all, in order for you to learn how to analyze Grandmaster games, you have to first understand the positional elements. So you have to identify the key positional factors, such as you have to know your pawn structures, you have to know your piece activity, your piece coordination, your king safety, your space control. I talk about this all the time. You have to recognize these things: who's controlling this file, who's controlling this rank, who has their rook on the 7th rank. You know what I mean? Just basic positional elements. You have to recognize these, because if you don't, then you might be confused on positions where there's no tactics happening. And when you're a beginner, you probably know your forks, your skewers, your pins, you know that. But what do you do when there's no tactics around? When there's no threats for you to exploit? What do you do? Well, you have to be taking in those small advantages, and the only way you can take in those small advantages is by learning your positional elements. So you have to do that. And when you're analyzing chess games, Grandmaster games especially, they know this, and that's why they're very patient when they are setting up their pieces. Now, second thing, recognize tactical patterns. So obviously you need to know your pins, forks, and skewers, and discover their attacks. But if you're trying to learn how to analyze Grandmaster games, you have to know more than that. You have to know the advanced tactics too. You have to know basically what Swishishuk is, Zugzwang. You have to go further beyond, because Grandmasters use several different tactics in chess games all the time. You have to know your deflections, your attractions, etc. You have to learn these things, because if you don't, then you're going to be confused. Your clearances, you know, I can go all day. All right, third thing that I want to go over, and this is kind of with recognizing tactical patterns, is calculating variations. If you don't know how to calculate variations, then you're going to be in trouble, because when you're watching a Grandmaster game, let's say you're watching on YouTube or on like a chess network of some sort, and you're given a position, your instant reaction should be calculating. All right, you shouldn't be confused. You should start calculating, trying to answer as many questions on the chessboard, because that's what the grandmasters are doing. And once you get used to calculating move sequences, then you're gonna recognize, okay, that's why that grandmaster didn't go that direction, because of this, this, and that. And that's the type of like thought process that you need to have in your head. fourth thing is study end games. You have to study the end game. You have to learn how to analyze how a move might transition the game into an end game. And it might be good for you and it might be bad for you. Have you ever seen a Grandmaster game and wondered, okay, why are they trading pieces so readily? Like, why is he doing that? And you might notice, oh, okay, he won that game because he knew that he had a protected passed pawn. That's why he traded off to an end game, because it was a guaranteed win. And so learning end games is going to get you to the point where you're like closer to learning how to analyze Grandmaster games. Now, sixth thing, after studying end games, you have to evaluate piece activity. And this is one that is really important, because you have to assess the activity of both sides and the coordination of pieces. And guess what? And this is a main thing that you have to recognize, is that grandmasters tend to improve the activity of their pieces while diminishing their opponents. So, for instance, a grandmaster might look at the board and realize that, okay, that piece is good, that piece is good, that piece is great, that piece is excellent, but that piece right there, it could be better. That piece is trash right now, actually. Let me just be honest, that piece could be doing a lot better right now, but for some reason, it's right there. I don't want it right there anymore, so I'm gonna switch it. And this type of thinking comes from non-tactical positions. So clearly, tactics rules overall, right? So if there's a tactic for you to lose a piece, stop that tactic. You know what I mean? You can't just allow your opponent to bulldozer you, all right? But if there's no tactics around, no threats, then you can think about, okay, how can I get my pieces to better squares? And you might be wondering, why would a grandmaster put their knight on the edge of the board, or put their knight back to the first rank? Because they want to reroute that knight into a better square. And it takes a lot of effort and a lot of patience on your part to actually recognize, okay, there's no threats from my opponent. How can I make my position a little bit better? How can I make sure my pieces have a role or a purpose in this game? And that's one thing that you can do. Let's continue. So you have to learn how to evaluate piece activity, and you have to look for prophylactic moves. What is prophylactic moves? Well, it's recognizing moves that prevent the opponent's plans. So you have to get good at countering your opponent's plans. You have to get good at recognizing the threat that your opponent is trying to do on the board and stopping it. Grandmasters are excellent at doing this, and they're excellent at not only stopping the opponent's plan, but going forward with their plans too, acknowledging that, okay, I have my own threats. I'm going to get initiative for my own threats while stopping your threats, because your threats is useless. Let me just say this. You're not the only one playing chess. Your opponent has a brain. Your opponent has the same books. Your opponent has the same knowledge. You're not the only one playing chess, so that's why you have to think about, okay, what is my opponent going to do in the next move? The first thing you should think about, actually, once your opponent makes a move on the chessboard, is what is my opponent's threat? That should be the first thing, because if you don't think about that, then that threat, you're going to lose by. Prophylactic moves is really important. Grandmasters do it all the time. Sometimes they do a move to stop a plan, and people are like, okay, why did he do that move? Well, he did that move to stop a positional element that the opponent had planned. He stopped them from getting a small advantage. All these principles come together, and you have to recognize all of this at the exact same time, because all these things could be just happening in one game. It's very interesting. I know chess is very deep. All right, next thing, assess time control. All right, you need to assess who has more time control, who has less, who spent more time on one move and who spent less. Whoever usually has more time control has less pressure on their belt and has more time to think about a certain move. Whoever has less time control has less time to think and is under more pressure, so they're more inclined to do a worse move. You got to consider these things, because, and let me just say this too, and this might be surprising, but grandmasters don't always go for the number one move. Even though they know which one is the number one move, or they don't have enough time to consider the number one move, they might go for the second or third best move. And this generally happens in blitz games that are under 5 minutes, or even like especially bullet games, because you definitely do not know what is the number one move in those games. They go to the closest move as possible to being the best. And if you don't got enough time, then you don't have time to decipher or go through a variation where, let me just say this, because if you're actually thinking about the number one move, that could get you into more tactics that you don't have time to consider. And so you have to go to the more simpler move at that point. The move that gets you to play out the full game in under 3 minutes, all right? Because you don't want to lose by some blunder that you missed because you didn't have enough time to consider it. And plus two, you don't want to be living off the increment. You don't want to be living off the extra 10 seconds that you get with every move. That's a horrible way of how to play chess. Time management is really important. All right, next thing is evaluate control of key squares. You need to recognize the moves that control important squares or outposts because they could influence the whole board. Hey, a knight on an outpost is better than a rook. Remember that principle, it's really important. Next thing is you got to consider the psychological factors, like understand how a move might affect the opponent psychologically, because there are some opponents that have certain weaknesses than others or certain advantages. There are some opponents that love boring positions, and there are some opponents that fear boring positions and actually wants to make things a little bit more energetic, which is their downfall. Those things happen in chess all the time. And that's why you have to, like, if you're going to be the best, you have to be an all-around type of player. And, you know, Magnus Carlsen was number one for a while. Now it's Ding Liren, and he is an all-around player. I will give him that. And he plays my favorite opening, which is the Catalan. All right. Next, we have analyze tempo and initiative. Assess whether the move seizes or maintains the initiative and how it affects the game's tempo. So you might be wondering, oh, why didn't the Grandmaster just defend that piece right there? That would have just been simple, just one move. Well, that gives the opponent the initiative. We do not want our opponent to get an initiative to put us on the back burner. We do not want to be on the defense. We do not want to be passive. We want to be the one charging forward, making our opponent defend for the rest of the game. And that's how Grandmasters play. That's mostly how all Grandmasters play. Now, nobody wants to be on the defense because there's too many things to defend against. When there's too many things to defend against, then you're going to spend more time thinking about all the things that your opponent could do. And guess what? You got the time going after you. You're being attacked. You got your pieces defending to their very best. You got a passive position, very cramped. You need to trade pieces to a winning end game, but every end game is not favorable to you since your opponent has already taken a lot of space. It's just bad all around. So do not be stuck on a defense. Be the one attacking. All right. Don't be one of those players that, come on. Chess is all about putting pressure on the opponent and nothing else. So do your best out there. And the last thing I want to say is learn from annotations and commentaries. We have so many commentaries. It is insane. You can get the magazines from US Chess or from like FIDE Chess. They give you magazines on the top chess games played with Grandmaster annotations. You can look at those and learn from them. We have so many books in our libraries that we can look at. And then plus, we have YouTube. I mean, when do you ever see Hikaru Nakamura play chess and actually commentate on what's going on in his head and why he played that move? We don't have that. We didn't have that like 10 years ago. We didn't have that. But now you do. You have streamers, you have books, you have YouTube, you have Twitch, you have even Facebook. Like, chess is on every single social media platform. You have communities that you can join online. You have chess clubs still, physical chess clubs that you can go to around the corner from your house, especially if you live in the city. Like, there's abundance of things that you can do, and you even have me speaking to you right now on how to learn how to play chess, on trying to give you that thought process on how to analyze Grandmaster games. Use that wisely, okay? Use that wisely. All right, So all the things that I went over, I talked about understanding the positional elements, recognizing tactical patterns, and there's many more other than these. I talked about calculating variations, studying end games, evaluating piece activity, look for prophylactic moves, assess time management, evaluate control of key squares. I talked about considering psychological factors in the chess game, and just think about the Bobby Fischer Bobby Fischer World Chess Championship that he won. There was a lot of psychological factors going into that game. We talked about analyzing tempo and initiative, and then we talked about learning from annotations and commentaries, because the best teacher is somebody else. You're not just gonna learn it right off the bat, you know. We came a far way where you're gonna need some outside help. It's impossible to just do it all by yourself, especially if you're trying to learn in the fastest time span possible. All right, that's pretty much all the advice that I have for you today. Let's get to the last segment. Yes, that was a good episode. We talked about how to analyze Grandmaster games. Hopefully you can use these secrets and actually infiltrate the Grandmaster games and learn from them so that you can play better. Because that's the whole purpose of analyzing Grandmaster games, so that we can learn the principles from it and you can play like a Grandmaster maybe one day. Or if you already are, hey, you're doing it big already. We're going to be learning from you. So if you use these secrets, you will definitely improve your chess game tremendously. All right. So thank you for listening. I appreciate every single one of you. Keep on fighting till the end. Staying focused in chess and in real life too. Peace.